Well, good evening, everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to everyone joining us here for our weekly show here on Brighteon TV, The Tenpenny Files on Your Health. You know, for the last 22 years, I've given literally thousands of interviews on radio, television, podcasts, live conferences, and seminars, and almost all of my information, one way or another, has been about vaccines. But as a trained emergency medicine physician who is the director of a level two trauma center for 12 years and an integrative physician who's had a busy practice in Cleveland, Ohio since 1996, there are many things for us to talk about and to discuss. Think of this as an educational show that I hope will bring value to you on your health. Tonight is our monthly special guest update with Twyla Braze. Twyla Braze is the president and co-founder of Citizens Council for Health Freedom, a patient-centered, privacy-focused policy organization established in Minnesota to protect patient-doctor freedom. You won't want to miss this. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use, and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant. You can take it when you're nursing. You can give it to little children. You can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out, the heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch with in our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years.
Go to drtenpenny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Thanks for being here with us this evening. Twyla Braze is the president and co-founder of Citizen Council for Health Freedom, a patient-centered, privacy-focused, free market policy organization established in Minnesota more than, a long time ago. I have that date down there wrong, Twyla. I'll get it right one of these times. To protect patient and doctor freedoms. Her effort has led to amazing results, including the development of the Wedge for Health Freedom and Patient Toolbox, easy-to-use tools that help patients understand their options and coercive situations and maintain control over their health. Twyla's Health Freedom Minute is heard daily on more than 5 million listeners and more than 870 radio stations in 48 states. And including to all that, she has written an incredible book that just has lots of staying power called Big Brother in the Exam Room that is more pertinent now than ever. The Dangerous Truth About Electronic Medical Records and What We Really Must Talk About. Twyla, thank you for coming back this week. Thank you so much for coming back for your monthly update on the Tenpenny Files.
Well, Sherry, it is always a joy to be here. Thank you so much.
I want to start with the first thing that you sent to me was about Minnesota Patient Privacy Win. What is that all about? That sounds like a good place to start with some good news for a change.
It is very good news. So what happened in the state of Minnesota is that we have had the strongest medical privacy law in the nation for about 30 years. And as a matter of fact, it's strong. It protects us from HIPAA. But in October, the Minnesota Supreme Court decided to moot our state law and declare that HIPAA was the law of the land in Minnesota. So we actually had a Democrat who got just completely perturbed about that. And then we worked with a Republican in the other chamber. And between the two of them and a lot of bipartisan support, they changed the law to undo what the Minnesota Supreme Court had done. And so now we are back again with the strongest medical privacy law in the nation. And an interesting thing about this is that the health plans and some others came out with written testimony against this bill to restore Minnesota's privacy law. But they didn't come up to the testifying table, so they couldn't be asked questions. And so then when it got to the Senate, they decided not to even be in the room or provide testimony because, of course, we were just bringing the law back to what it's been for 30 years. What were they doing saying that they didn't actually want to do this? So they didn't even make themselves available to be publicly asked any questions whatsoever. So wow. It's kind of funny.
Well, you know, our whole judicial system and our whole government is just like, what's up is down and what's down is up and what's left is right and right is left. So it doesn't surprise me at all. Mm-hmm. But that's really, really good news for Minnesota. And hopefully it will set a precedent for other states across the country. You know, you mentioned that Medicare trustees reports mean that Congress must act. This is another piece of good news. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, it's good, but I don't know how good it is. Sort of like, you know, what are the trustees doing? So the trustees came out and they said that Medicare has another 5 years of life before it goes insolvent. Wow. So it was scheduled to be insolvent in 7 years, 2031. And when the trustees came out, they said, oh, it's now got until 2036. But to what degree is that actually true? Because there's a lot of doctors who are choosing to leave the Medicare program because it pays so poorly. It's really a welfare program. I don't know if your listeners understand that, but if you have Medicare like chops off something like 60% off the top of the bill, pays a certain percent, then tells you to pay the other 20% of whatever that is. You know, and so it doesn't pay very well. And I realize that the government is planning to get everybody into Medicare Advantage. And we've got a handbook on Medicare that is we're on our way to getting it done to help people escape the government's plan of getting everybody into a rationing healthcare plan. But the fact of the matter is, Medicare is really running out of money, and the only way they'll keep it lasting longer, I think, is by just rationing more care. And the federal government already says that Medicare Advantage plans are rationing medically necessary care to seniors. Medicare-approved care, the health plans are saying, nope, we don't approve it. And then if you appeal, 75% of the time, they're going to actually give you the care. But guess what? Only 1% of the doctors and the patients ever appeal. So this is like a really lucrative strategy for them, is that they just deny a whole bunch of things. And then if you've got the wherewithal, the time, the energy, if you're not dying, you know, whatever, then you can appeal and you'll probably get it. But so I don't know that, you know, giving it another 5 years means as much as maybe the news media said it means.
Wow. Well, what is this, you know, the gap coverage that you have to pay for? I mean, I'm enrolled in Medicare now, which against mm-hmm. my will. I absolutely mm-hmm. did not want to do it and was pretty much forced into it. And, you know, then you have to pay for this gap coverage. And I'm looking at how much I'm paying every month, which is exactly why I did not want to do this, because it's like, you know, what problems I do have, I'll just pay for out of pocket, even if I have to pay for it over time, you know, mm-hmm. versus, you know, what I'm paying for every month, that I'll never use those dollars. And what happens when you've got that gap coverage that they kind of rape you with? I mean, is there a way out of that too?
Yes, I'll give you some information about that. So we're far enough into the book that I have a fair amount of information that I could share on that. One thing that I would say is, you know, you're still working. That's correct. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're still working, right? But people who are working and they're working for a company that has less than 20 employees are forced into Medicare, and then they're forced to pay a higher amount depending on what they make. They can be forced to pay a higher amount. So that, you know, that's like really unfair, because you're working whatever insurance you had, you have to get rid of. Now you have to go into Medicare, and then you're forced to pay a higher amount. And so, but then this gap, so the Medigap policies is what you're talking about. And so that is to cover your co-pays, your deductibles, and your co-insurance. Now, a lot of people say, well, I don't know if I really need this. I think the critical time that you need this, The way to understand why you might need this is because Medicare isn't insurance. You know, I just would like to highlight that it's not insurance. And so it only covers like 60 days in an episode for a certain amount of money. And then you have to have this gap between when you go into the hospital the next time, and then it'll start again. And then you have to pay another deductible. And then it only covers a certain number of days in the hospital. So what if you're just like catastrophically ill, right? That's what you really need the Medigap for. But you don't have to pay a really high price for Medicare. You could get one of the high deductible policies that in some states, maybe not yours, you'd have to look at it. But in a lot of states, that's a really inexpensive policy. It's like $50 a month. And there's a deductible, but it's not like any other deductible you've ever heard about. It's like, let's just say you had $100, right? And then Medicare chops off 60%. So now the bill is 40. Now Medicare pays 80% of the 40 and leaves you with, we'll just say $8 for you to pay. Well, now you take that $8 and you go to your deductible of $2,800 and you just say, okay, I paid eight. So now I've got a deductible of 2,700 and whatever dollars, right? $92. And so it just keeps all those little tiny, because they are tiny, all those little tiny expenses just keep adding up until you get to the high deductible, which is right now $2,800. And then it pays everything 100%. And if you have a Medigap, you have the right thing. You do not have Medicare Advantage. And Medicare Advantage takes away your freedom, rations your care, forces you into prior authorization. But original Medicare is the only one where you can have the gap insurance, the gap coverage. And that's where you have the freedom. And that's where you could have this really inexpensive policy. And most people can afford, you know, $2,800 little by little by little by little by little, right? And so anyway, there are ways, and we will talk in the handbook what we call the 10 traps of Medicare, the 10 Medicare traps. So that'll be coming hopefully in a few months.
Wow. Now, is that the same thing as the gray trap of Medicare and increasing the escape hatch? Is that the same thing as what you're talking about there?
No, the gray trap is having to do with the fact that there are all of these senior citizens. So the people who are calling it, you know, the gray trap are talking about the fact that we have all these gray-haired folks who are coming into Medicare. And indeed, it's like the end of the baby boomers, right? I think the baby boomers are done in 2030, if I'm correct. And so we've got all of these people who are coming into Medicare. They're expecting it to be there for them. And you know, it's probably not going to be there in a way that a lot of people are expecting it to, or it will be for a while. But then after a while, we're just going to run out of money, and they're just going to ration. And you're going to feel like you have something until you realize you have nothing.
Wow. Wow.
Some people call it the gray tsunami, but it's been a gray tsunami for a while, but it's really feeling more like a tsunami now because the program is running out of money. And part of the reason it's running out of money is when the program began in 1966, became law in 1965, and a year later became effective, 19 million seniors got free care despite never paying a dime into it. So it's always been a Ponzi scheme, right? It's always been a Ponzi scheme. There were almost five workers to every person who was getting Medicare. But today, I think by 2030, if I'm correct, it's going to be 2.3 workers. And as people choose not to work, more and more as people choose not to work, it just means that there's less money coming in to even pay the payroll tax, which covers Medicare Part A and part of Part B.
Well, and it says, you know, in the article that you sent me, it says that by 2050, which is literally right around the corner, mm-hmm. they are projecting that Americans 65 years of age and older are to make up almost 25% of the population. And there is certainly not a working tax base to support that. There's just really not. And we end up with, like you said, this Ponzi scheme. You know, back in the day when they created Medicare, back in 1965, and they started in 1967, you know, at that point in time, the life expectancy, the average life expectancy was 67 or 68 years of age for men and 71 for women. So the government said, well, we can take care of these old people for just a couple of years. And now we've got the average life expectancy of men being, you know, somewhere around 82 or 83, and the life expectancy for the average life expectancy for women being somewhere between 85 and 87. So now we've got an additional 20 years of people that are forced to enroll with Medicare, even if they're still working, and that's taking money out of the system and not really putting money back in. We've got another, and then we've got a lot of people in their 90s and that live even to their hundreds that are expecting this to take care of them, and there's just not going to be enough money. You know, I found that really interesting when I went on Medicare. You know, the Medicare is under the umbrella of Social Security. So you get, you know, you're talking to the Social Security Administration about Medicare over here. And one of the questions that they asked me was, would I like to start withdrawing on my Social Security now? And I said, well, yes, because I thought, well, I don't, first of all, you know, if I waited until I was 74, or 72, something like that, I'm 66. It was going to give me an extra, I don't know, $25, $50 a month or something. And I said, well, first of all, I don't know if I'm going to live that long. And second of all, we know that they're running out of money. And maybe by that length of time, there won't be any money left. So yeah, I'd like to start withdrawing on my money now. And then they asked me, how was I still working? And I said, yes. And they asked me how much I was making per year. And they said, well, you don't qualify. Actually, to withdraw on your Social Security, you have to be making below the poverty line in order to get it. Now, I always thought that that money that they took out for Social Security was like putting it into the government's piggy bank. It was your money. They used it. They spent it for all this other stuff. But when you wanted to take it out, it was your money to take out. Boy, that is not the truth. I mean, you have to be making like no money, be poverty stricken, and be, you know, on choosing between buying your pills and eating food, or what they used to say, between eating food and eating dog food, in order to qualify to get that money out that they've taken out of your check all those years.
Well, I find it interesting that they told you that, because I feel like I'm pretty certain that you have to start taking it when you turn 70. And so I won't swear to that, but I'm pretty certain that you can wait until you turn to 70 and then you can start taking it, and that they don't let you wait longer, but you do definitely make more money. Now, I could, like I said, I could be wrong on that. I'm doing it on Medicare. I'm not doing it on Social Security, this report. But the fact of the matter is that it never was put into a piggy bank, ever, ever, ever. And if I am correct, I heard this a long time ago, that the Social Security law itself does not guarantee you access to this money. Oh, it allows Congress to change its mind and use it elsewhere. So it's nothing. I mean, it's just like the Medicare trust fund, right? There's no Medicare trust fund. There's nothing except excess money coming in than is going out. But there has not been excess money coming in than going out since 2008. Although in 2015, 2016, there was a little bit more coming in. And so now it's just on a deep dive as retirees are taking this money, and there's not enough workers to, you know, make up the difference.
Well, no wonder they want to kill off all the old people, right? They want to give them COVID shots and do all the things that they would do with them. So anyway,
well, I actually feel like, you know, like it was 2 years ago, maybe, or so, that they said it was out of money in 2028. And then suddenly the next year they said it had three more years of life. And I thought, does it have three more years of life because so many seniors died during COVID? I mean, that's just a question I have. I don't know if it's true.
Well, I have the same thoughts that you do, Twyla. I mean, we really do. So with that thought, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be coming right back. We've got more to talk about in this monthly update with Twyla Braze, and really important information, particularly if you're a senior or if you have a parent that's in the area of getting Medicare and Social Security. This is important information that you want to know. So sit tight. We'll be right back. There are an awful lot of people that are affiliates for Mike Lindell because we all really appreciate what he does for this country. We appreciate the hard work that he does, and we appreciate his products. He has more than 200 products in his store, everything from pillowcases and comforters to doggy beds and to wonderful slippers and bathrobes. There's something for everybody and something for everybody in each age group. I mean, one of the things that I really like a lot are the pillowcases, the children's Bible story pillowcases that I just think are such a great way when you tuck your child into bed at night to use these pillowcases that they come from his store to start to tell the story about Adam and Eve and Noah and the Ark and different things. And they're colorful and they're really pretty. So from children all the way up to your gentlemen that want to have like nice slippers or to your dog, the doggy beds and things are just wonderful. So my pillow is a great place to shop for just about anything that you want. And if you use our affiliate code DRT, that helps us, that can benefit us, that helps Mike Lindell, and you'll get a great product for anybody that you're shopping for.
Well, thank you everyone for coming back again. We have this really, really great information that we're talking about for people that are 65 years of age and older. Let's change gear just a little bit and talk about ivermectin. What do you think about this thing about Cuomo's reversal on ivermectin that suddenly now he was one of the biggest, he and Lemon were the biggest two people on CNN that were pushing people to get the shots. Lemon got fired. I have no idea where he is a while ago, but Cuomo is now changing his whole thing about, yeah, well, I'm injured. I'm a vaccine injured person and I'm taking ivermectin and people should have had access to this. What do you think about his reversal on that, Twyla?
I think it's really interesting. What I find most interesting is that he never apologized for anything right. that he said. He never apologized. And actually, whoever's program he was on, somebody asked him, and they asked him the question, you know, somebody on Twitter or something asked him, you know, will you now apologize? And so the host said, well, so Chris, will you apologize? And Chris said, no, I won't apologize. You know, that's what we knew back then. That's what we knew here, whatever. And my whole thing is you're on the radio. Where was your curiosity? If there is such, if there's doctors who are losing their license or being terminated, don't you have some curiosity to figure out why they would actually, you know, sustain that harm? Isn't there just some natural tendency? Because if he had even looked up ivermectin, just looked it up. And he, you know, he could have said, well, I don't know, you know, this is what I'm seeing. It's really, it seems like it's really safe. Even NIH was using it to, you know, test it for cancer. You know, where was the curiosity? I mean, maybe he just takes what is spoon fed to him over a teleprompter. You know, I don't know. But yeah. So now he admits, so I don't know if this is a little COVID amnesty, you know, I don't want to be blamed. I'm now coming in the right direction. I know I was in the wrong direction, but I'm not going to apologize. Right. And so, you know, I don't have any idea, but what he is saying is correct, that they lied and he doesn't know why they lied and that they should never have lied and that they did everybody wrong. And so that's all accurate. And so it's good. But where is his apology?
Yeah, where is his apology? And all these kind of doctors that are coming forth out of nowhere and saying they're so sorry that they had, you know, gotten involved with this. And now it's like, where were you 4 years ago when you were murdering people? And now just because you come forward and you say, mea culpa, we're supposed to say, no big deal, pat them on the back and, you know, send them on their way. I don't think so. There still needs to be accountability. And speaking of accountability, what do you think about Fauci's hearing today?
Ah, Fauci. So I wish I could have listened to the whole thing, but the one part that I did listen to is when he claimed if there hadn't been all the lockdowns that and all of this stuff that he already has admitted that there was no science behind it, no science behind, you know, 6 foot distancing. Burks had kind of admitted that, you know, several years ago that they just like pulled it out of the air. Right. And so he admitted it too. Right. But the thing I heard him say is, if that hadn't happened, if they hadn't done all of that, there would have been another million people dead. And I thought, seriously, you are going to testify to this to Congress. And so I don't know everything else that was said. I just really, because we had our organization had a huge meeting today, so I just couldn't be there listening to everything, but I tuned in just in time to have him hear him say that he thought a million more people would be dead, which of course, you know, with everything else that he did. Oh yeah. And of course he said that, no, it wasn't him. It wasn't the federal government that did any of this. Right. They didn't have any power to do any of this. So, you know, they're not to blame for any of this. This is what the local and the government and the state entities did. But of course, yeah, they were heralding all of this to be done. They were being very strong about it. They were saying this is the only way that you could save people. So what are the governors going to do? Right. Listening to their public health people. Of course, unless you've got DeSantis who says, OK, let me go talk to some other people. Let me think about how this is going to ruin our economy. Let's think about what this is going to do with the children. Let's see if there's another voice. So, you know, he was the voice. And he's just saying, you know, I don't have any control over what, you know, people did.
You know, when this first started very early on in the whole pandemic nonsense, I had Paul Alexander, you know, Dr. Paul Alexander, a big epidemiologist on my podcast. And he was ranting, literally ranting about the fact that he had tried to advise Trump otherwise about Operation Warp Speed and how, you know, running this through as fast as he could, it was going to come back to bite him. And then he told me a story about how he was walking down the street with Fauci and a couple of other people, and they were talking about this whole social distancing thing. And that some people were saying, well, I think it should be 3 feet, you know, that's 3 feet is big enough. And then people said, no, 6 feet. And then some couple people said, no, 10. Well, how about 12 feet for some of the little small cafes and, you know, shops and things like that? 12 feet was probably enough. And they went back and forth until they said, yeah, 6 feet is probably good. And that's how they decided it. He said it was literally a wet thumb to the wind, sort of like, yeah. And when you think about the number of small shops, small businesses, small cafes and things like that, that had to completely close down, lose their businesses over a wet thumb to the wind number and a number that they came up with based on a science project of some girl in New Mexico. And that how many people's lives were absolutely decimated. And, you know, and I way back when, Twyla, I used to say I wanted to find somebody who was a cartoonist. And I wanted them to create a cartoon for me that when they were speaking was like a virus came out of their mouth, went exactly 6 feet and dropped to the floor, you know, like, you know, just out. And it knew, you know, like the smartest virus ever. It knew how far 6 feet was. It could count the number of people in the room. It could tell what time it was. It, you know, could do all these things in the 6 foot, you know, drop to the ground sort of thing, because it was so ridiculous from the very beginning. And now he's admitting one more fraudulent thing that they did. And think about, you know, the John Hopkins. So remember that social distancing program that they came up with at the beginning and the tracking program that they had at the very beginning, and mm-hmm. that people could go through that program. Me and one of my other employees actually went through the program because it was free and you could sign up for it. And I signed up for it because I wanted to know what they were talking about. And they were like training people on social distancing and contact tracing, and that you could get a job as a contract tracer for maybe $30,000 to $40,000 a year by following people around and making sure that they were wearing a mask and standing apart. I mean, all of these things that has happened, if people just kind of try to remember a little bit about what was going on, and none of these people are being held accountable. I mean, there isn't a single one of them that's been arrested. Nobody's pension has been sanctioned. None of them have been charged with murder like they should be. What do you think about all of that? What do you think about the fact that none of them have been charged? Do you think they ever will be?
I don't know if they ever will be, but I think that really depends on maybe the next administration and maybe the next Congress. And so I guess we'll see. I'm heartened by everything that the congressional committee is coming up with, and, you know, learning that these people at NIH got $1.2 million. They listed the number of people in NIH that got $1.2 million in royalties
each.
Each.
Oh,
each.
My.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
my
so,
goodness.
And then learning that Fauci and his, you know, what, his next, his right-hand man or whatever, you know, they figured out ways to make sure that they could escape all FOIA searches so that nobody could find out what they were talking about, or they were communicating on private phones, and they were communicating with special symbols instead of letters so that the search would not bring up their email. You know, this is all, you know, I can hope that this is actually going to happen, that something will really come out of this. But I did want to say something about what you were talking about the virus in 6 feet. So I'm reading this really great book by Dr. Claire Craig called Expired. And there's three expires that she's talking about, including expiring of, you know, breath, right? So she's just got some wonderful statistics in this book, which you can't help but remember forever. There's one of them, which is something like over in a nighttime when you're sleeping, you are expelling 72 million molecules in that 8 hours that you're sleeping. And then there's another one where they talk about the research that they knew a long time ago, is that there was an island off the coast of something or other. But anyway, I just don't remember where it was, but I think it was in Asia. And there was hand, foot, and mouth disease on the mainland. And that hand, foot, and mouth disease traveled 170 some miles across the water, 34 miles or something like that inland, and then affected the herd. Nobody traveled to this island at all. So it was all completely aerosolized and just traveled over the water and dropped in on the herd and affected the herd. And so, you know, I told somebody in one of the speeches that I was giving that if you could see this room, this is sort of like what she said, if you could see this room, if you could see all the molecules that you are all breathing in and out, all
yeah,
and you have done so for the entirety of your life, you know, and if you are horrified by this idea and, you know, just know that just because you can't see them doesn't mean that they aren't always there. And they go through the mask, right? They in and out. And when I looked at, there's a new mask study, I didn't look at all the details, but one of them said, you know, it was 70% effective. So that's 30% ineffective. That means,
yeah, right. Yes.
Like all the virus is still going in. I mean, really, you know, there's just no real serious science, you know, going on here.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. And unfortunately, it's going to be recycled here in the not too distant future. So we have to keep talking about this, and we have to keep reminding people that there's no science. There's over 150 published articles saying that masks don't work, and the only thing they do is make people who wear them sick. And it's like spitting in your hand and rubbing it on your face all day long. And we need to talk about the nonsense of social distancing, the fraud of PCR testing, if they start that again. Yes. And how they lied to us on every single thing about these shots, and that they are going to try to do it again with bird flu or whatever they're going to bring up. Mm-hmm. And so it's really a nasty sort of thing. So with that, Twyla, hold on just 1 second. We're going to take another really quick break, and we'll be right back. We got some really important things that we want to close out here with. So stick with us. We'll be back in just 1 minute.
I'm wiping my teeth. It's been bugging me. Okay.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. We're talking to Twyla Braze here, and we're talking about some really important things that you need to remember. We need to keep this conversation going. COVID is not behind us. COVID is still with us, and we need to not just go, oh, that was a thing of the past, and we have to be behind us. We have to be vigilant, because right now, I keep saying that you don't really see much of this stuff going on, but it's kind of like the inhale before the next exhale. They're just like bringing things back, because everything they do is like a market test. They throw it out there, see what our response is, go through the little cycle, and then they pull back and they crunch the data, see what worked, what didn't work, what that they should do more of, what they shouldn't do of, where the pressure is that we can get people to comply, and where is the line that if we push on too much pressure, then they revolt. And this is where we are right now. So we need to keep talking about the myth of the mask and all these things, which brings up another thing about ivermectin. We were talking about ivermectin before the break. and how it treats viruses, all kinds of viruses and all kinds of parasites. And now there's a really big push to be investigating ivermectin with cancer.
There is. So there is a wonderful interview on American Thought Leaders at the Epic Times TV, and it was Dr. Ruddy, and she was just talking about the three scenarios, three different patients that she saw that just sort of blew her away, and who started taking ivermectin, one of them with prostate cancer and been told, you know, go get the priest and go home and die. And she had said, well, you might want to just try ivermectin because I don't think it'll hurt you, but you know, there's some possibility it could work for cancer. And she said, you know, by the end of the time she's making this interview, right, he's out dancing 3 nights a week for 4 hours a night. And he called her and he said, if I didn't know I had cancer, I wouldn't know I have cancer. And this is all because of the ivermectin plus some nutritional, improved nutrition, right?
And let's just expound on that, because I watched that interview. It was really good. And it was, and he had metastatic prostate cancer in like 11 bones of his body. And one was in his femur, to where his leg was all swollen and hot and tender. So for him to have done the ivermectin, gotten a lot better, his PSA, which is the test that they look for a prostate cancer, normal is kind of less than 4 or less. I think it's higher than that. So normal is less than 7, but his was in the hundreds, like 600 or 700 range. Mm-hmm. It had dropped down to 1.3. And his cancer was so gone with the ivermectin that, like you said, he was out dancing because he no longer had the swelling and pain in his femur because of this great big tumor. So that was the first one.
And the mets were gone. The metastases were gone. They were no longer in his bones at all.
Yes. And then the second one was
it was a man who was 70. Who wasn't willing to do anything. He couldn't eat. He couldn't, he could hardly speak. And it turns out that he had 2 esophageal tumors. And he just decided on his own to start taking ivermectin. And I think within 3 months, he could eat and he could speak. And then his tumors were gone. They did a CAT scan on him, much to he didn't really want to do it, but she convinced him and his tumors were gone, all gone. So just gone, right? And then there's another one with a woman. But I, at the very end, for people who are going to go listen to this, go all the way to the end, because I thought what she said about the fact that they knew a long time ago, which I didn't know this, I'm a nurse, but I did not know this. A long time ago, they decided that there were actually viruses that cause tumors. And so when she was thinking about this, having seen these three people, and she kept saying, well, that was interesting. And she finally decided, I'm not going to wait for the fourth patient. I'm going to do something about this. So she started her own research on people who choose to take ivermectin voluntarily for their cancer. And so if anybody's listening and you're doing that, you know, go let her know. Because she's keeping track of it. She's doing her own research project about this. And but what she, you know, discovered too was just thinking about the fact that they used to think it had to do with viruses. And what is ivermectin? It is an antiviral. So it's anti-clotting, it's anti-inflammation, but it's an antiviral. Because she was trying to think, what does an anti-parasitic medication have to do with COVID, which is a virus? And then what does it possibly have to do with cancer?
Right? Well, you know, and it does treat parasites. And we've known for a long, long, long time, like since the 1800s, that parasites and cancer were somehow related. We never have, because it was poo-pooed. It was all the Raymond Rife stuff and all of those sorts of things that the pharmaceutical company wouldn't hear of it. You know, a drug that costs pennies. Oh, excuse me, pennies literally, compared to the hundreds of thousands of dollars to poison people with chemotherapy. So she's using the Framingham study and as her backbone. And the Framingham study, for those that don't know, was a huge multinational study that went on for years. In fact, it's still going on, that it was just a data collection process that that's where they first found out, or they first talked about cholesterol levels being elevated. It had an increased risk of heart disease, where various different things had increased risks of types of cancer, types of diabetes. And so they just, volunteered thousands and thousands of patients that they would just go. I don't remember. It's been a long time. It's been since in the 80s when this started. But they would go at least twice a year, maybe it was more than that, to get their blood drawn. And it was just a data collection. And she said, well, I can do that with cancer. And I can do that with people who are volunteering to do to use ivermectin instead of doing chemotherapy. And I can just collect the data and we can just set it up with the Framingham Institute. And so like Twyla says, if you have decided that I've either done conventional therapy, and like that first gentleman we spoke about, he had done, radiation and chemotherapy, and they had said, I'm sorry, there's nothing else more we can do. We can't give you any more of either of those. And so he's like, well, is there anything else? And that's where Dr. Reddy said, well, this can't hurt you, might help you. And they're basically cured his disease. And so she's collecting that data. And so for those people who really want to know about that, if you go to the Epoch Times, the Epoch, EPOCH times.com, and put in the name Dr. Kathleen Ruddy, spelled R-U-D-D-Y, you can listen to that. And it was a really interesting interview. And then find out where to contact her and to be involved in that study if that's something you choose to do. I think it was really very powerful.
And just in case I didn't say it at the beginning, she is a cancer surgeon. So this right. was not her typical way of looking at cancer at all.
Yes, she started out by saying, listen, I'm a cancer surgeon. What do I do with parasites? Like nothing. What do I do with parasite cleanses? I mean, what do I do with that? Because the guy who interviewed her says, what is it with all you people at FLCCC? Are you just all like pro ivermectin? And she's like, no, I just found these people because because of this research that I was doing. So it's a really, really, really good interview. And it's something that really should become mainstream. And it's a topic that's far past its time. Twyla, our government has lied to us about every single moment from the start and has not told us anything that's been the truth. And it's been all whistleblowers and Freedom of Information Act people that have uncovered all of these different things. There was an interview that Jeffrey Sachs did with Tucker Carlson, and he was talking about the fact that everything that they said was fraud. And if it wouldn't be for the Freedom of Information Act people and the whistleblowers, we would have not found any of this stuff out. What do you think about what he said, what Jeffrey Sachs said, and his whole issue about public health, the public health powers, and where we are and where we should be instead?
Well, I was going to say from back when you said something about COVID is not done, right? And I was thinking about the woman. It was just became news that a woman was denied by Mayo Clinic, denied a lung transplant because she's not fully vaccinated for COVID. I mean, what are they doing? People are dying from the shot, and they're doing that. So this lie, this narrative just continues into today, and people's lives are affected. Then you look with what Jeffrey Sachs said about everything that they were learning about the gain of function research that was being done in China and being done by our own government. And the fact that Ralph Baric might not be a common name to any of your listeners or anybody who's not following this closely, but this is an American citizen who's deep into research and is considered really an expert in genetic this and that, right? And, he brings this project to the head of the federal research, the defense, the Department of Defense, the lead federal research agency. And he goes, I want to do this. I want to create coronavirus with a furin cleavage site in it. And a furin cleavage site is meant to make it more infectious, more virulent, more pathological to humans. And of course, DARPA, this agency, said, yeah, no, we're not helping you out with that. And he wanted like probably $14 million. It was millions of dollars. I think I heard once it was 14. But there were some who suspected that Baric had already done it. And he was just coming to try to get the funding because he had already done it. Well, he was turned away by DARPA. But then within 2 years, suddenly we have COVID, coronavirus disease of 2019, COVID-19. And look, it's got a furin and cleavage site in it. And I recently saw a number in the last week or so that there's something like maybe 2,100 etiologies or genus or whatever of coronavirus. And there's never, ever, ever been a furin cleavage site. And that's what Alex Washburn said, too. He said, in the history, in 1,000 years, coronavirus has never been found with a furin cleavage site. And of course, why is that? Because it's put in. It's manufactured, it's engineered. And, you know, and so for everybody who's just like, you know, pussyfooting around this whole thing of, you know, maybe it's still pangolins and wet market and everything, never a furin cleavage site. And that's what the researchers said to Fauci on January 31st, 2020. And he told NIH Director Francis Collins on February 1st, 2020, that the night before, what he called credible scientists were very concerned that it looked engineered. Well, of course it looked engineered, because the thing that Ralph Baric wanted to create and wanted money to create, a furin cleavage site in coronavirus, was right there, right there. And everybody knew that that's what he was trying to do. And they knew that that didn't happen naturally. Right. And of course it came out of China, and there was so much money, and Ralph Baric was working with the Wuhan Institute. And so, you know, whether we can find an actual one point of evidence that's just like conclusively says, oh yeah, absolutely. You know, if we can uncover all the tracks that lead to the fact that, of course, it was done, it was engineered, it was purposefully done. It was done because, you know, every scientist knew.
And they really tried to retract it and cover it up. And through their FOIA requests and email releases going back forth, they're going, holy cow, who did this? What is this all about?
Right.
You know, and so if you can track down that interview between Jeffrey Sachs, spelled S-A-C-H-S, Jeffrey Sachs, and Tucker Carlson, I mean, he was like livid in that site. Like, how could they have lied this much to us and cover everything up to this degree and have all of these people in on it? It's just, you should, all of you that are listening to this, you really should track that down and listen to it. It was very, very good. Well, Twyla, unfortunately for tonight, we are all out of time. We could go on and on forever. We've got so many things that's still on the list to talk about. But tell people where they can find you and what you're up to and how they can support your organization.
Well, thank you. Yes, they can find us at cchfreedom.org, cchfreedom.org. We have a whole bunch of things that we are up to. One of the biggest things is having to help legislators all across the country with real free market, pro-privacy, pro-patient legislation. And of course, our wedge of health freedom, we're trying to build that and get as many free market direct pay doctors into there so everybody in America can find a doctor who works for them. And of course, we're always working on privacy and, you know, trying to make sure that everybody understands that HIPAA does not protect privacy. And so we're coming out with more and more tools for people to use in the exam room, at the hospital, and at home. So again, cchfreedom.org.
Well, there you go, everybody. It's something that you need to bookmark, you need to donate to, you need to support, you need to get their tools and learn how to use them. And again, Twyla, you always bring such incredible information to the plate, and I look forward to our next conversation. And so with that, I want to thank everybody for being here with us tonight. This is our Monday night review on the 10 Penny Files on Your Health on Brightian.tv. With that, I want to close with one of my favorite verses from the Bible I close all my podcasts with, whether it's live or pre-recorded, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until the next time, if you didn't want to listen to this again, it will be on my Substack on dr10penny.substack.com on Thursday. It will be posted up there so you can listen to these references, and we'll have all the links and things below it on the Substack so that you can link onto them. And that is dr10penny.substack.com. So until the next time, remember to lean into God, Come back here on Monday night. Listen to us again on the Tenpenny Files. You're on Your Health on the next episode. Twyla, have a good evening. And everybody else, good night and God bless.
In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.